Good day, and welcome to the Children's Medicaid Enrollment Decline conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during a question-and-answer session. To register to ask a question, you may press the star and one on your touch-tone telephone at any time. Please note this call may be recorded, and I will be standing by if you should need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn the program over to Ms. Joan Alker. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thanks, Erica. Good morning, and thank you, everybody, for joining us today. This is Joan Alker, and I'm the Executive Director of the Georgetown University Center for Children and Families. I'm going to be moderating the call today. In a moment, I'll introduce our terrific lineup of speakers, but I wanted to just provide some brief introductory remarks to set the context for today's discussion. So we're here today with our partners because Georgetown Center for Children and Families is releasing a new report. The report is entitled Medicaid and CHIP Enrollment Decline Suggests the Child Uninsured Rate May Rise Again. So a pithy title, but it gets to the point. As you know, Georgetown CCF closely monitors the trends and demographics of children's insurance status. We do an annual report in the fall using Census Bureau data. The report that we're releasing today uses recently released CMS administrative data that looks at a different but related question: how many children are enrolled in Medicaid and CHIP? We wrote this report because we are extremely concerned about what we are seeing and what it portends for the uninsured numbers this fall. For many years, there's been a national bipartisan commitment to reduce the number of uninsured children, and those efforts have borne fruit. Unfortunately, today, we do not feel confident that this national commitment still exists. In 2017, we saw the uninsured rate for children move in the wrong direction for the first time since at least 2008. The data we're discussing today suggests that the number of uninsured children continues to rise and possibly at a higher rate. These findings demand immediate analysis and action from our federal and state leaders. However, to date, we have seen no such commitment or even acknowledgement that children losing coverage is a problem. So let me now introduce our speakers, and I'm really excited to be joined today with our colleagues at the American Academy of Pediatrics, First Focus, and Children's Defense Fund. We're going to start out hearing from Tricia Brooks. Tricia Brooks is a senior fellow at the Georgetown Center for Children and Families, and she is the lead author of the new report. Tricia authors also the annual Kaiser Family Foundation Survey on Medicaid Eligibility and Enrollment Policies, is a leading expert in this area, and is the former New Hampshire CHIP director. The report co-authors Edwin Park and Lauren Roygardner, also from Georgetown, are here and available for questions. Then we will turn to three reactors that will share their perspectives. First, we'll hear from Bruce Leslie. Bruce is the president of First Focus, a bipartisan advocacy organization dedicated to making children and families their priority in federal policy and budget decisions. Next, we will hear from Dr. Laura Garakardis, who is the deputy director of the Children's Defense Fund of Texas and a longtime leader in the advocacy community working to decrease the rate of uninsured children and families in Texas. And finally, we will hear from Dr. Lanre Felusi, who is a pediatrician at the Children's National Health System here in Washington, D.C., and a national spokesperson for the American Academy of Pediatrics. Dr. Felusi focuses her clinical education and research interests on how social factors, including poverty, immigrant status, and many others, affect the health of children. And with that, I will turn it over to Tricia Brooks.
Thank you, Joan, and good morning, everyone. So in the report, we address four questions. What do the enrollment data tell us? Is the decline a consequence of either a stronger economy or a shift to private insurance? What federal and state policy factors are impacting enrollment? And what can we do to regain the nation's momentum in covering children? So as Joan noted, we achieved historic milestone in 2016, covering more than 95% of America's children. And that success is largely attributed to increased enrollment in Medicaid and CHIP. So it's particularly concerning that nearly a million fewer children are enrolled or were enrolled at the end of 2018 than in the prior year, particularly when this follows the first increase in a decade in the number of uninsured children. So what do the enrollment data tell us? There were 38 states that experienced a decline of a combined decline of 912,000 children. 70% of that enrollment drop in numbers is concentrated in seven states. All of those states have a decline of at least 50,000 children, and you can see those states in the pie chart on page 3 of the report. Additionally, 9 states had percentage declines that were more than double the national average of 2.2%, and those also are on a map on page 4 of the report as well as in Appendix Table 2. I do want to note that 4 states appear on both of those lists. They have more than 40,000 fewer kids in Medicaid and CHIP, and they have a percentage decline that's more than double the national average. And those states are Illinois, Ohio, Missouri, and Tennessee. So as Joan noted, we haven't heard a lot from the Trump administration, but what we have heard is that they point to a continued strong economy as the reason for the drop. But is there evidence to support those claims? And more importantly, are these children gaining coverage elsewhere? So my co-authors and I looked at trends in unemployment, wage growth, and potential shifts to employer-sponsored insurance or private non-group insurance, as well as historic data on the enrollment in Medicaid and CHIP. And it's true that Medicaid is sensitive to changes in the economy, but while enrollment growth historically slows during favorable economic times, it's really unusual for there to be a decline in enrollment. Between the year 2000 and 2016, there was only 1 year, 2007, where the number of children enrolled in Medicaid and CHIP declined. So growth of the economy and employment have been steady over the past decade, but there was no surge in employment or real wage growth that would account for the enrollment plunge in 2018. There also is negligible evidence that any economic factors have substantially increased access to affordable private or employer-based coverage for low to moderate income families. In fact, even with a decade of economic growth, there has been a declining share of non-elderly people with incomes between the poverty level and 4 times the poverty level that are enrolled in employer-sponsored insurance. It's far more likely that eligible children are falling through the cracks. We do have evidence of both national and state factors that are impacting enrollment. So at the national level, the Trump administration has made significant cuts to outreach and marketing and consumer assistance from a total of $164 million in 2016 to only $20 million in 2018. And there is a huge chilling effect of anti-immigrant rhetoric and policy proposals. A recent national survey found that 1 in 6 immigrant families with children under the age of 19 did not participate in non-cash government benefit programs like Medicaid and CHIP in 2018 out of fear of risking future green card status. Of note, the Congressional Budget Office recently upped its estimate of the uninsured by 1 million and lowered its estimate of Medicaid and CHIP enrollment in 2018 by 2 million, but not because of the strong economy. Actually, CBO indicated that it underestimated the impact of the repeal of the individual mandate penalty, noting the spillover effect on Medicaid and CHIP. And then there are very specific state factors, and this paper discusses a number of those that could be contributing to churn at the state level. Those include eligibility system challenges, slow take-up of the ACA streamlining rules, stricter and more frequent reviews of eligibility, and other procedural barriers. These vary by state based on the policies and procedures that specific states have adopted. But we do know that historically many studies have shown that a large share of individuals who lose coverage are really disenrolled for procedural reasons, and many reapply within a matter of weeks or months. So what can we do to resume progress toward a shared vision that all children should have access to affordable health insurance that they need to thrive in school and beyond? I think the first goes back to Joan's point of having a commitment to covering all of America's children, having that culture of coverage. The federal government and states should also put the welcome mat out again by investing in outreach and consumer assistance to help families learn about and enroll their eligible children. States should also cut red tape by adopting policy options like 12-month continuous eligibility that not only increases coverage, but eliminates administrative barriers to enrollment and renewal. And while personalized consumer assistance is important, states can do more with technology to improve efficiency and support enrollment and retention, offering mobile-friendly online tools with features that allow families to access and submit information, like a simple address change, provide convenience for families, and saves money for states on administrative costs. So knowing that the economy has had a minimum impact at best, we really must call on state and national policymakers to address these factors, from systems and renewal issues to enrollment barriers to threats like public charge. We must take a hard look at these administrative actions and barriers and what it means for our children's health.
Thank you, Tricia. I'm going to turn now to Bruce Leslie, the president of First Focus.
Thank you, Joan and Tricia. So I would love to just highlight what a great report this is, and that it really does do a thorough look at not only what's happening with kids coverage, and what a sharp contrast that has been to what has been happening. So we've as a nation, we've cut the uninsured rate in children by 2/3 over the last two decades, and as Trish highlighted, have really seen enormous progress year by year, with the exception of one time in the 20 years. And so this reversal and increase in the uninsured rate of, the coverage rate of Medicaid and CHIP by nearly a million kids is an enormous number. And we're really concerned about the effects of this has, particularly in light of the bigger picture. We know that suicide rates for children are also up. Infant maternal mortality are at some of the highest levels in the developed world. We see increases in school shootings, child abuse and neglect rates. So we're failing our kids, and then we're also now, the evidence here in this report really highlights we're also failing kids with respect to child health coverage. So I want to sort of highlight four things that Trish already highlighted, but just sort of underscore. One is Senator Thune just did an op-ed in the Washington Times about, highlighting that, we reauthorized the CHIP program and what a success that is. I think an important thing to point out is it was 4 months delayed, and consequently there was as the report highlights, there was a delay in outreach and enrollment grants that went out. And what state's going to do outreach and enrollment in back-to-school periods when the program's expired. And so there's been really a year where there's been a loss there. Also, the outreach enrollment grants through the ACA, the Trump administration, the report highlights, has cut funding for those outreach enrollment efforts by 90%. I really think a very important thing to really highlight is the chilling effect of the proposed public charge rule. We know that one in four kids in this country lives in an immigrant household, and between this report and then another report by the Urban Institute highlighting the problems that and concerns families have with basically interacting with the government in any way, and certainly providing coverage for their kids in programs like Medicaid or CHIP or even things like SNAP, WIC, Head Start, et cetera. And then last, this is an arcane issue, but it's enormously important, which is as Tricia talked about, as sort of a culture of coverage or the welcome effect, or you can take the other position of sort of highlight, trying to work toward bureaucracy and red tape. And so the effect on that on coverage for families and children is enormous, and you're seeing that. And I think that's another reason why in some states you're seeing enormous declines in coverage, and in other states we're still seeing, a maintenance or actually even some progress. So, I think this is an outstanding report and really highlights this broader context of how we're failing our kids, and we're failing to address enormous important things that are affecting their well-being.
Thank you so much, Bruce. We're going to turn now. Texas is one of the states featured in the report, and Dr. Garrick Hardis from CDS.
Thank you for having me on. Just a little bit of background on the Children's Defense Fund here in Texas. We've worked for over 20 years on children's health care coverage by advocating for improved policies, but we also work on the ground helping families day-to-day apply for health care coverage for their children. So this really lets us see firsthand the impact that a lot of these national policies are having on our families, from decreasing the Navigator and outreach funding, and also the anti-grant rhetoric and policies where, which are really leading to families showing up at our offices and at their health care providers asking for their children to be disenrolled from health care coverage. But we're also very acutely aware of how state policies can have a significant positive or negative impact on our children's health care coverage. Texas has the highest rate of uninsured children in the country and has had that for quite some time because we have failed to implement many of the best practice policies known to reduce child uninsured rate. But like many other states, our uninsured rate had been improving for about a decade and took a reverse in course over the last few years. We recently learned just this year that a new state policy implemented in 2014 is now a big part of the problem. We have data confirming that our state's overly cumbersome month-to-month eligibility checks in our system are causing thousands of eligible children to get kicked off Medicaid coverage. So under our system, children in Medicaid are getting 6 months of continuous coverage followed by month-to-month income checks for the second half of the year. And these income checks use automated systems to flag families that could potentially be over the income. Essentially, this means that families may be getting letters up to four times a year between renewals, and that's causing significant confusion for families and throughout our healthcare system. The data is also showing that these income checks are erroneously flagging families at the very least 30% of the time, and that families are not being given enough time to respond before their children are being automatically disenrolled 10 days after the system flags them. And that's not 10 days after they receive the letter, giving them time to respond. It's actually, well before the letters are even mailed at that timeline starts. So when these month-to-month coverage policy, when this month-to-month coverage policy began, CDS and the entire child health community started seeing a significant increase in churn of Medicaid-eligible children, and the families had no idea. They were showing up at their doctor's offices for appointments, finding out that their child no longer had health care coverage. This was causing them to miss preventive care. And not get medications and therapies for chronic health conditions. We now know from our agency data that over 4,100 children on average are being disenrolled from coverage every month due solely to paperwork issues. And so for every 10 that are being dropped from coverage, 9 of them are losing coverage due to red tape. And of those children losing coverage, we know that more than half of them are re-enrolling in either Medicaid or CHIP within the year, strongly suggesting that they were eligible all along. Just to give a little story of one family we worked with, this family is, very good with paperwork and is quite practiced at sending what's essentially the same verifying paperwork to the state every few months. Yet twice over the last 4 years, they didn't receive the letter notifying them that they were being checked. And the first time this happened, their son missed 3 months and needed therapy for a developmental issue while the family fought to get him back on health care coverage. And the second time, their son happened to develop pneumonia over Christmas break that caused two costly trip to the emergency room for that family. Unfortunately, the legislative session this year in Texas, our leaders failed to prioritize this issue and actually left the squad policy in place, which means that we're going to continue knocking thousands of eligible children off of their health care coverage every month. And, you know, clearly there is more that our state can do right here at home to decrease our worst in the nation child insured rate, and we need to start by implementing 12 months of uninterrupted coverage for children in Medicaid, just like we do for more moderate income families and CHIP and essentially every other health care program. And so I think our key message for today is that while there are many national factors at play, state leaders can and must do better for our children.
Thank you, Laura. And now I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Faluzzi.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you all today. I am Lonnie Faluzzi. I'm a national spokesperson for the American Academy of Pediatrics and also a practicing pediatrician at Children's National Health System here in Washington, D.C. So working in D.C., I see patients from across the tri-state area, and I can tell you firsthand that Medicaid and CHIP are lifeline programs for my own patients and, of course, for children all across the country. That's why I am deeply concerned by the findings of this report. When I think of the almost 1 million fewer children enrolled in health coverage, it is much more than just a number to me. I can't help but think about the hundreds of thousands of individual stories, and we heard just one compelling story just now, of children who are no longer enrolled in the programs that they need in order to stay healthy, and most concerning, what they're missing out on when it comes to their short and long-term health. So children are not just little adults. They have unique health needs and require unique care. Medicaid offers comprehensive benefits that many private health plans won't cover, like hearing and vision screens and wheelchairs and dental care to meet children's needs as they grow and develop. Children enrolled in Medicaid miss fewer school days due to illness or injury than uninsured children. They perform better in school and are more likely to graduate high school and attend college than their uninsured peers. They eventually earn higher wages. However, if children are not enrolled in these programs, it can jeopardize their ability to grow up and healthy and thrive. Even brief gaps in coverage, and I see this in my office, can cause a child's care to be delayed or skipped. A disenrollment notice could delay a child from getting necessary vaccinations or cause that child to miss a well-child checkup that could have identified cancer in its earliest stages. There have been many issues discussed on this call that could explain the drop in enrollment, one being the looming public charge final rule, as we discussed, and its chilling effect on our immigrant families. The public charge proposal presents immigrant families with an impossible choice. Either keep your family healthy, but risk being separated, or forego vital services like Medicaid so your family can remain together in this country. And although the final rule has yet to be issued, the proposal has already caused immigrant families to avoid or even disenroll from programs that they're eligible for out of fear, like Medicaid. And I've seen this myself. In fact, I feel strongly that this proposal has affected nearly every immigrant family that I see in my office, either directly or indirectly. As part of these appointments, I talk with families about health programs that they're eligible for, and more parents are telling me that they don't want to sign up. This carries real consequences for children, and the public charge proposal is forcing these parents to make that impossible choice. So the bottom line is, we need all children in the United States to reach their full potential if we are to reach ours as a nation. Ensuring that children are enrolled in health coverage designed to meet their needs is necessary to making that possible. Our lawmakers must pass policies that keep programs like Medicaid and CHIP strong, not those that jeopardize the critical gains we've made in children's coverage. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Faluzzi. Erica, can you tell folks how to queue in with a question?
Yes. As a reminder, it is the star and one to ask a question. Again, star and one to ask a question.
And while folks are queuing up, I just want to make one observation. Now, we've heard numerous examples now and data about children experiencing gaps in coverage when they're turning on and off because of red tape barriers. And unfortunately, in the case of the chilling effect, perhaps avoiding coverage for long periods of time. And it's important to understand that even gaps in coverage have negative consequences. As Dr. Feluzzi mentioned, children miss appropriate developmental screens. They may miss vaccinations. And they may have a simple condition like an ear infection that goes untreated and gets worse, and they wind up in the emergency room. So not only is this a setback for the child, it's a setback for the family, because even in a short period of time of being uninsured, they may rack up medical bills that they can't pay. And so this is a serious barrier for families who are struggling to get out of poverty, and has economic consequences as well as the health consequences. Erica, do we have any questions?
We do have one question. We'll go to Daniel Goldberg from Politico. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for doing this. You mentioned before about how the administration has sort of said that this is all related to an improving economy. Did you look at the economies of the states that had higher disenrollment and compare them to other states? I'm just curious if there's any way to sort of track along those lines, their arguments.
Yeah, I'm going to ask Edwin Park at Georgetown to respond to that.
Sure, this is Edwin Park. We did look at the relationship between enrollment declines in Medicaid and CHIP and changes in the unemployment rate over the same time period, December 2017 to December 2018. And there does not appear to be any clear relationship between changes in unemployment and those enrollment declines. For example, of the states with the 10 largest enrollment declines, percentage declines, several actually had increases in their unemployment rate, and one state had no change in their unemployment rate over that time period. So, you know, the argument of that this is merely the result of a strong economy is overly simplistic and isn't borne out by, you know, a rather straightforward comparison of those two factors.
Thank you.
Okay. Next question.
Yes, we'll go next to Tammy Louvey from CNN.
Hi, thank you for holding this call. Could you let me know, you had mentioned that the definitive numbers won't be out until the fall with the ACS. What are you looking for? What will that data hold? When will it be available? And, you know, will that be the definitive answer as to whether more children are shifting to private enrollment or to job-based enrollment?
Sure. I can start off on that, and then others can jump in. This is Joan again. So every September, the American Community Survey data is released. That is the source that we use for the annual report that we do that looks at children's coverage sources. And so that data, when it comes out this fall, we'll be able to look at 2018, which is the same time period this administrative data looks at. And we will be able to assess where the uninsured rate is going and whether employer-sponsored coverage has increased or decreased. And when we did that last year, I mean, the data will be available, the top lines will be available sort of early September. Do we have a date yet? Okay, so it's sometime in early to mid-September. We'll get the top lines. What we do is then we analyze all the state trends, and we'll release a report on that. That will be later in the fall, probably late October. But we will get the top lines in September when that data is released.
And will you be able to then tell us something more definitive then, or do you really need to wait for the more in-depth report?
So we will certainly comment on the top lines right when they come out. When we write the longer report, we're able to look at who are these uninsured children. That helps us to explain some of the causal factors and look at the state trends. And that's what we do the longer analysis for.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Tricia's going to add something.
I was just going to add that preliminary data from the National Health Interview Survey actually shows a slight decline in the share of children under age 18 in private health insurance coverage between 2017 and 18. Now, that may not be statistically significant, but they're not showing a divergence from the trends that we've seen over time. And I think this is what gives us some confidence that we are going to see growth in the uninsured rate because there's just really nothing in the economic picture to suggest that in a single year something would have been different than what it's been in the last 3, 4, 6, 8 years with a strong economy.
Yeah, and just to add to that, when we did our report last fall, we did see that more children were getting employer-sponsored coverage as a result of the good economy, but it was not enough to compensate for the loss of public coverage. And
right.
even if
right.
half of these kids that today we've seen, if half of these kids that lost Medicaid in 2018 become uninsured, and that's frankly probably a really generous assumption to assume that half these kids are getting employer-sponsored coverage. That's highly unlikely. But let's just say half had. We'll see a larger increase in the uninsured rate this year when we do the report than we saw last year, which was the first time we saw a significant increase. So that is why we're really extremely concerned.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Next question.
Thank you. And as a reminder, it is star and one to ask a question. We'll go next to Julio Ocha with WUSF Radio.
Hi, guys. Thanks for holding this meeting. I you may have just answered my question, but you said last year we saw the uninsured rate increase. I'm wondering if there was a similar decrease in CHIP and Medicaid enrollment last year as well?
No, it was not this large. Do we have the numbers?
Yeah, I would say it's really flat. We saw a tenth of a percent decline, about 50,000 kids, but those data did not include three states. So fundamentally, we would call that flat rather than a decline.
And in this data source, because in the ACS, we did see fewer kids in the bucket of Medicaid and CHIP coverage, but nothing like what we're seeing now, which is why we're so concerned.
And the reason there's a difference in the ACS data is there's a really large undercount of Medicaid and CHIP in the ACS data, so it's not the best source of Medicaid and CHIP enrollment.
So, I mean, I'm wondering if there's a correlation. Has there been in past years a correlation between the number of uninsured kids and a decrease in the CHIP and Medicaid enrollment?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a decrease in the uninsured rate because Medicaid and CHIP enrollment has been going up. That's what's been happening every year, and it's absolutely correlated. And the American Community Survey is the best source to look at coverage sources, broadly speaking, over time by state.
The other factor that we have is something called participation rates in Medicaid and CHIP. This is a measure that has been reported by the Urban Institute for the past 10 years. We know that as the uninsured rate has declined, the participation rate in Medicaid and CHIP has gone up. But we just got new data for 2017, and it shows that just like the uninsured rate did a reverse, so did the participation rate. It went down. So we definitely see correlations there over time.
Thank you.
Okay.
We'll go next to the line of Ashley Lopez with KUT. Please go ahead.
Hi, I have a question about Texas. I'm wondering how many other states have a similar situation where there are monthly checks after 6 months, and do the other states that also had big gains have sort of similar or comparable systems in place causing churn like that?
Laura, we're going to turn to you in a sec, but Tricia, I think, has a good national view of that question.
So Texas does more checks than any other state that we're aware of, doing a check of behind the scenes of income in the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th month of enrollment. So we're not aware of another state that would be doing those kind of monthly checks. States do not have to do periodic checks, but we're seeing more and more states that are doing perhaps quarterly checks, but we don't have specific state-by-state data on the frequency or the source that they actually are checking. Some states may only check death records, for example, on a monthly basis just to be able to eliminate anyone on the rolls who's no longer alive. So that's one thing I would love to explore more in our 50-state report that we do with the Kaiser Family Foundation, is to probe a bit more into the frequency of the checks and what data sources that they're actually using.
Laura, do you want to jump in here?
Yeah, I think that's essentially the answer, that we don't know of any other state that's doing the month-to-month income checks. But one thing that I would point out is here in Texas, every family doesn't necessarily have all their children aligned on the same schedule. So a family might have two kids on different month-to-month schedules, and that really creates another level of complexity for families in Texas.
I think it's really important to point out, in Texas, they are not doing this for more moderate-income children enrolled in CHIP. They're only doing it for the poorest kids in Medicaid. And they should be, if they're getting income information that suggests that a child should, you know, move from Medicaid to CHIP, they are supposed to honor that data and enroll those kids in CHIP, and they're not doing that either.
I mean, do you know a reason for that? I know that Texas also, like you guys mentioned in your report, has like a third-party vendor that does that. Is that just a function of like this, like who's doing, like working through this data?
So I think that what the state is doing is they are basically using the system to automatically close a case if they have sent information to the family and said, we need to clear up this discrepancy. If they don't get that information back, rather than looking at the data and saying, oh, well, they do look like they're CHIP eligible, so we should send them information about enrolling in CHIP, which requires an enrollment fee. But they should be doing that. I mean, federal law does require that Medicaid be coordinated with CHIP coverage, and they aren't doing it.
Got it. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thanks, Ashley. So I'm going to ask Bruce Hussley and Dr. Feluzzi to just share a couple of concluding thoughts. And if anybody has any final questions, please do buzz in and we'll get right to you. Bruce?
Yeah, absolutely. So I just want to underscore something Joan said in her opening remarks, which is I really believe this report is a clarion call that there needs to be national and state action to address this terrible trend. We've got significant problems going on with children in this country around a range of issues, and we've made such significant progress that this is not the time to go backwards. And so there's legislation in Congress, for example, on 12-month continuous. Laura talked about legislation in Texas to go to 12-month continuous. We do it for, you know, as Tricia just said, we do it for CHIP in Texas. Why are we only doing this to the lowest income families? We also do it in the ACA. So we have this sort of culture. We need to return to sort of this idea of a culture of coverage or welcome mat effects. And then also I just want to point out that the American public is so with us on this. There was the Kaiser poll a few years ago, and the number one issue for the American public was not tax cuts, it was not the economy, it was actually reauthorizing the CHIP program that Congress let expire for 4 months. There was a poll yesterday that I urge people to sort of look at, which was a poll on where Iowa voters, what they think about kids, and 84% of Iowa voters said that a candidate who made children's health, nutrition, and I think education a top priority would be people that they would more favorably support. And it was, when asked what are the top issues facing that you thought that candidates for office should consider, children's issues were number one. 80% of voters in Iowa said that should be a top priority of any candidate. And the next closest was the economy, and that was 68. So kids are a priority, and are, you know, it's just unfortunate that what we're seeing is a failure among federal and state policymakers to adhere to what voters want and make children a priority.
Thank you. Dr. Feluzzi?
Yeah, so thank you all again for joining us. I'll just end by, again, reiterating some of the health effects of what happens when kids do lose coverage. It means they lose their access to getting vaccines on time, and we've seen outbreaks in this country recently, so we know what the effect of that can look like. Blood screening, anemia screening, developmental screening, mental health screening. And you heard from Laura about one child who had pretty significant adverse effects from lack of coverage and ending up in the hospital. And I just wanted to now multiply that by 828,000 and think about what that means for the health of children, for healthcare costs in the long run. But again, it does not have to be this way, that our lawmakers really can take action, and we are leaning on them to do that.
Thank you so much. We've got one final question.
Yes, we'll go to Christina Ghirardelli from Desert News, Utah.
Hi, yeah, I'm just wondering, you guys talked about some legislation that would have 12-month continuous coverage. Who's sponsoring that legislation? Can you give a little more detail about that in terms of federally?
Yeah, absolutely. It was actually legislation introduced by Texas members originally, and this bill is a bipartisan bill. So originally, Congressman Barton, Republican from Texas, and Congressman Green, a Democrat from Texas, had introduced this 12-month continuous bill. Now it's they've both left Congress, and so the new legislation was introduced by Congressman Katko from New York. He's a Republican, and Congressman Kennedy from Massachusetts, and he's a Democrat. So there's a bipartisan bill in the House, and then the Senate sponsors, I'm spacing on, but there's also a bipartisan bill in the Senate to do 12-month continuous.
We can email you with that information.
I'd like to make a point about 12-month continuous. More and more, these children are being put into Medicaid-managed care, and we don't have a lot of great evidence of whether that is saving money or improving children's health outcomes. And some of that is because you cannot fully measure the quality of care unless children are enrolled continuously for a period of time. So for those who really want to make sure that we are spending our healthcare dollars wisely and that it is improving children's health, we really need to make sure that these kids don't have gaps in coverage.
Does that answer your question for now, Christina?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay. Do we have any final questions? Okay. I want to thank everybody for joining us today and all of our terrific speakers. And please let us know if you need any more information. And thanks, everyone, for joining us today.